Good morning. It's always good to be in your presence and to stand here and to look out and recognize most of you. It's always good to be able to open up the Bible and just read the Bible. I grew up on a farm down in East Texas, and my mother always received a magazine that somebody anonymously mailed to her, and it was called A Firm Foundation. I don't know if any of you can remember that. We have no clue where it came from. And my mother was an avid reader. She would take the newspaper that would come once a week, and she would read it from cover to cover every day, the same newspaper, until the next one came. And then she would only stop to listen to a newscaster that was called Paul Harvey. Anybody remember Paul Harvey? Well, some of y'all are around my age. that's how I learned a lot about the church, when I would, she would read this magazine and just lay it down, and I would come behind her and pick up this magazine, and I would just read it. It was a real interesting newsletter. And there are some things that you will never forget. I am a coffee drinker because of my father. I never did care that much about coffee, but I wanted to be like him. He would sit at the table, and the coffee was in a saucer, the cup. And it was so hot that my father would pour the coffee into the saucer and then pick the saucer up and just blow on it to cool it down, and then would sip from the saucer until the rest of the coffee cooled down. And so sometimes he would leave some coffee in the saucer, and when he left the table, I would go to that saucer and get the what was left, and I would drink it from the, just like him. So today, whenever I get a cup of coffee, I look around for a saucer, and so I have to learn how to change my whole tactics. I hope that you can hear me all right. I turn the mic on. Maybe one day that you could come and visit us at the Crenshaw Church. It's not too far away. I guess it's about a 45-minute drive at the most when traffic is good. We're 3 miles west of USC and right near the Crenshaw Mall. The subway or the train is going to go down Crenshaw, which is 1 mile from where we are. And I'll be glad when they get that thing finished. It is so, it 2 years from now, oh my Lord. And not only that, I live 1 mile from the Forum and where they're going to build the stadium. And I have my car parked out front, and it's the dirtiest car that I have ever owned, because that dust just comes over all the time. And I spend a lot of time just getting the dust off. So you all pray for me that my frustration won't get too bad. But then I look forward to Sunday, and it kind of, I can relieve all of the pressure. I can do all of that. And so we'll invite you to come. If you come at 11 o'clock service, we'll feed you. If you come at the 8 o'clock service, you have to get there by 7 or 7:15 in order to find a seat. It's so packed. We call that the brunch crowd. They come at 8 so they can get out early and go to brunch. Then the 11 o'clock is the, those are, the older folk, and a lot of families with babies and things like that. And so they're there, and it's really interesting. We have a very interesting preacher. He's a graduate of Pepperdine, and he's just one of those guys who just love the Word. And we'd like to look up one day and see you all there. If you come as a group, let us know, and we'll set it up for you. That's a good way to shut a church down, is invite the whole church to come over and worship with us. I want to read from the book of Luke. There's a parable in Luke 18. I want to read verse number 9 through verse number 14. It says, it's the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. To some who are confident of their own righteousness and look down on everybody else, Jesus told this parable. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood up and prayed about himself. God, I thank you that I am not like other men, robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all I get. But the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven, but beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. I tell you, this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. There's just one phrase, if you back up, where this man said, God, I thank thee that I am not like other men. Actually, I look at this as a prayer, and they're praying. But what's so interesting about this parable to me is they're praying, but he's praying for the wrong thing. And so if you are writing down any or taking some notes, the subject of this message, thanking God for the wrong thing. The parable of the Pharisee and the publican is without a doubt one of the most meaningful and the thought-provoking passages to me in the entire Bible. And all of the true-to-life illustrations that were uttered by Jesus Christ, none deals with human nature more vividly than this one. The parable tells of two men who went to the same church at the same time, I want to make it 21st century, and engaged in the same activity, but were as different from each other as night is from day. This parable is what you might call a comparison or a contrast between the sin of virtue on one hand and the virtue of sin on the other hand. You see, when sin leads to confession and repentance, when it leads to a plea for mercy and a desire to improve, it becomes a virtue. On the other hand, when a person's virtue expresses itself in arrogance, self-exhilaration, in intolerance and bigotry and selfish pride, that person's virtue becomes sinful. And so this parable to me allows us to get a candid view of these contrasting entities, the virtue of sin and the sin of virtue. The parable also deals with the relative merits of qualitative and quantitative prayer. The Pharisee uttered what may be called a comparatively long prayer. As a matter of fact, it contained really 34 words. And on the opposite end of the spectrum, the publican made a petition in which he only used 7 words. But when the prayer meeting was over, the publican's 7-word prayer had been placed on God's list of top priorities, while the Pharisee's 34-word prayer was left hanging in the ceiling of the beautiful chapel where it was uttered. This says in no uncertain terms that the effectiveness of our prayer is contingent upon the depth of our sincerity rather than the length of our petitions. The lesson to be learned from this parable, the lessons, they are countless. However, the one which surfaced today in my mind for this lesson this morning is this, that it is quite possible for us sometimes to thank God for the wrong things, to thank Him for those personal situations and those circumstances over which He did not exercise any control. God doesn't make people arrogant. God doesn't make people intolerant. God does not make people unappreciative of the contributions of other people, regardless of where they are from. He does not make them turn up their noses and look with scorn upon people who are not like them. So if you fit into any of these categories and are characterized by any of these lifestyles, don't thank God for it. He had nothing to do with your attitude, not yours, the church where I preach over in Los Angeles, not this one. I'm sorry, where I used to preach. Maybe that's why I'm no longer preaching. It has nothing to do with your attitude or self-righteousness. I think that is developed by our own. Let's look at the, if you don't mind, the so-called prayer of the self-righteous Pharisee, and we can get a pretty vivid picture of a person who is thanking God for the wrong thing. He opened his prayer with these words. He said, God, I thank thee that I am not as other men are. And then he named extortionists, adulterers, or lacking in scriptural knowledge as this publican. And he started listening to things. And now we must give him credit. But we got to give him credit for one thing. He opened his prayer with a word of thanks. But he immediately ruins his opening statement by thanking God for the wrong thing. And of all the things in this world for which he should have been grateful, he certainly should not have thanked God that he was better than everybody else. He could have thanked God, the Lord, for his very life, for the sunshine. He could have thanked God for the rain. He could have thanked God for the food that he had to eat and the water that he had to drink. He could have thanked God for a reasonable portion of health and strength. But he was so blinded by his own self-esteem that he neglected to see any of God's blessings. In his prayer, the Pharisee immediately characterized himself as a saint, and he characterized all others as sinners. He placed himself upon a pedestal of moral and ethical purity, and he threw everybody else under the bus. He did not say, God, I thank thee that I'm not like other men are, some other men. And the absence of an antecedent and a prefix indicates that he looks upon all men except himself as being crooks. And when you consider the state of mind, it is reasonable to assume that Before he began his prayer, he commanded God to give him his undivided attention. No doubt he could have said, Lord, I'm ready to pray, so I want you to stop what you're doing, and I want you to listen to me. I don't know if he said it, but I can draw some conclusions by what he said about what he was thinking. I want you to take all the other phones off the hook and so that nobody calls you while I'm talking to you. And tell the members of that, whoever may be singing in the background, stop singing. Tell them I prefer to have nothing else going on while I'm praying. Tell the cherubims and the seraphims to stop their antiphonal singing around your throne. Tell them to stop crying, holy, 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 Lord God of hosts. Tell them that I want my voice be the only one that is heard when I'm praying. So when I see someone who has that sense of arrogance, that sense of selfishness, I can think of a lot of other things that they could be thinking of while they are preparing to pray. Tell the 420 elders to get up off their knees and tell everybody else to stand at attention while I'm praying. Tell Gabriel to put his trumpet back into his case and tell them that I don't need anything else. I just want everybody and everything to be completely silent while I'm praying. Tell them that when E.F. Pharisee speaks, everybody listens. I thought you'd get it. And after giving God his orders on how to run heaven, he proceeded to pray. What am I describing? I'm describing a man who is up here, who thinks that he is better than everybody else, and that he has the inroads to God to tell God what he wants and to tell God who he is. I know God knows who I am. And I'm glad, I'm really glad that only God knows who I really am. I'm glad that you don't know who I really am, because it's easy to put on a front. And so I can be real by myself, but there's one other place where I can really be real, and that's home, at my house, because Mary and I have been married 55 years. And if there isn't anything she doesn't know about me now, something is really wrong with her. So I can't play the game. If I come in with an attitude, she knows it. If I come to her with a game that I want to play, she already knows everything that there is to know about me. And so when you come into the presence of God, come in for real and be who you really are, because he already knows. He already knows who you are. Listen to him. Listen to him. I forgot how long I'm supposed to preach. I assume that I can preach until I quit. Don't do that at Crenshaw. I'll be up there a long time. Listen to God. God, I thank you. God, I'm grateful. Listen to him. God, I want to say to you that I'm much obliged. Y'all ever heard that southern phrase, I'm much obliged? One of my favorite television shows is Gunsmoke. And Festus is one of my favorite. And he's always doing, having some cliches that I'd like to just write them all down. But one of the things that I'll never forget about him, when you do something for him or you ask him for a favor, he will always respond saying, obliged, I'm obliged, I'm obligated. And I remember my daddy the same way. Whenever you did something for him, he says, obliged, I'm obligated, I'm in your debt. God, I want to let you know that I appreciate what you've done for me. You see, Lord, here's what you did for me. I'm trying to be sarcastic. I want to see if you can really get it. I'm trying to be sarcastic. And if you look at me with a frown, I am succeeding. God, I want to let you know I appreciate what you did for me. You see, Lord, you made me superior to everybody else, and I like that. You made me not just a little better, but a whole lot better than everybody else in the world. And God, you know, I really like that. You have put me in a class all by myself, and I just wouldn't have it any other way. And I just want to tell you, Lord, how much I appreciate it. The Pharisee was thanking God for something for which God was not responsible. He was thanking God that he was a snobbish, conceited, religious bigot. And I feel that sometimes in our world, the most difficult people to deal with are religious bigots. One who has cornered the market on what we should do to worship God and got it down pat. And if you don't listen to me, there's something seriously wrong with you. I'm glad that God set me free. When I was baptized for the remission of my sins, I did feel free. I don't know how to explain this, but only when I got older and left home and moved away and went to college did I really appreciate my mother and father. I didn't appreciate them when I was there. They never gave any money. I had to work for everything I had. They were just mean to me. They wouldn't give me anything. Everything I got, I had to work for it. I thought they were horrible people. But when I left home, I knew then that I could work. Therefore, I did work, and I attributed to them. And when I became a Christian, when I was baptized, one of the things that came into my mind was my parents, especially my mother. And my mother had decided that she was 84 years old. And somebody was preaching in a church in Dallas, Texas. And at the end of the service, they were about to conclude a huge building, could seat about 1,500 people. And there was about 1,000 people in that auditorium. And my mother stood up. And it's amazing because people are standing up all the time and leaving, going to the bathroom and coming back and all of that. But somehow when she stood up, everybody noticed that this little old lady that was about 5'2", 5'3", weighed about 95 pounds, stood up and everybody stopped and they looked at her and she raised her hand. And she says, I don't know how I'm supposed to do this. All I know is that I want to be baptized. I don't know how to go about it. And I see a pool way up there, and I want to go up there and get in that pool, and I want to be baptized. But I ain't going by myself. I'm afraid to get into that water by myself. But I know that's where I need to be, and that's what I need to do. And just at that moment when she stopped talking, another lady who was on the other, they had four rows, and another lady on the third row over stood up. And she said, my mother's name is Ovi, O-V-A. And she said, Miss Ovi, she across the room, don't worry, I'll go get in there with you. And my mother, that lady walked over to her, took her by the hand, walked her down front, and they both got in the pool. And the preacher said, no, I'm going to do this one because this is Billy's mother. I'm going to do the baptizing. And that lady stood there, and my mother was baptized. That I will never forget because of the impact that it had on me. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. But I know that there's somebody who knows what I'm supposed to do, and they'll let me know. That's why I read the Bible. That's why I study the scripture. That's why I talk to the elderly people, those who have lived for a long while, because they have been able to go through some obstacles in life. But I want to go back and close with this. You know the rest of the parable. After the Pharisee finished his prayer of self-exhortation, The publican stood with his head bowed, and as he beat up on his own breast as a symbol of unworthiness, he said, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Christ went on to say that when this prayer meeting was over, for all practical purposes, the Pharisee was lost, the publican was saved. In essence, Mr. Pharisee, Mr. Wonderful, Mr. Clean, Mr. Somebody, you said you were thankful that you are not like Mr. Nobody. Well, I have some shocking news for y'all. Until you learn how to pray like Mr. Nobody, your prayers will not be heard. Until you come down out of your ivory tower, until you abdicate your throne of self-righteousness, until you return from your ego trip and humble yourself before God, your prayers will never make it to the throne of grace. So my last comment to you this morning, what are you thanking God for today? What are you thanking God for? Are you thanking God that you are on the other side of town? That's where you came from? If so, you're thanking God for the wrong thing. Are you thanking God that you are the one who made it to the top, who's have arrived? If so, you're thanking God for the wrong thing. Are you thanking God that you're just a little bit better than everybody else? If so, you're thanking God for the wrong thing. I want to thank God. I want to thank God for what he's done for me. Can I come a little bit closer? At home, our preacher walk up and down the aisle, just preaching up and down the aisle. Everybody have to turn their head to look at him while he's preaching. But I'll never forget what the Lord did for me. I got pneumonia, had to go to the hospital. And I think I've told you before, but let me say it again. And if you heard this before, pretend that you never heard it. And this is the first time. And I went to the doctor, and the doctor examined me. Oh, please, listen. I'm going to close, but I have to confess something that happened to me and told me and gave me direction to preach and write this sermon. I went to the clinic. And I was still hurting from the pneumonia. And I was still sick. And I called the doctor. I called the hospital. And they didn't have an appointment available. And I said, I need to see a doctor now. And they said, well, we can send you to a nurse. No, I want to see a doctor. Please, something is wrong with me. And they said, well, let's see if we can find you one. And about 10 blocks from my house was a clinic with Kaiser. Clinic. And they said, go down there and check in, and their doctor is going to come and see you. So I got in my car and I drove down to the hospital, to the clinic. I walked in, checked in, did everything I'm supposed to do. They walked me upstairs, taking all of my signs, they're taking all the information that they need, typing in the computer my name and address and all of those things. And while they're doing that, I'm looking down the hallway, and there is a lady walking down the hallway. And I look at her, and her hair was just horrible. And I said, where did she come from? And I looked at her shoes, and they were just really run over. They looked dirty. And she had on some jeans, and those jeans had holes in the knee. And I said, how did they let this lady come in off the street and just walk freely up and down the hallway? And then by that time, my intake nurse said, Mr. Curl, I want you to go to room 3. And so I get up and I walk to room 3, walk across the hall, and there she was going down the hallway. I went in and sat down and waited for the doctor to come in. The door opened. And guess who walked in? That lady. She was the doctor. And never before that this ever happened. She gave me an examination. She put all of those things on me, and then she got up and she left. And I said, wow, she didn't say anything. She just left. And then she came back in and she said, Mr. Kerr, we got a problem. And I said, what's the problem? She said, I have to send you to Kaiser Cadillac immediately. I'm going to call 911. And I said, oh, no, I'll drive. I said, nope, we cannot let you leave this clinic. And I'm thinking, Lord, look what I have done. I had these thoughts about a vagabond off the street coming into the clinic, looking so horrible, and walking like she was just drunk, hair all over her head. And this lady is saying, I got to send you to emergency. I refused to go with 911. I said, I don't live too far from here. I'll call my wife. She'll come and take me. They took me to the guard station, told the guards, don't let him leave. He has to stay here until we get him to the clinic, to the hospital. Took me to the hospital, and a few weeks later, took me in, cut me open, took my heart out, fixed the valve, put it back in, and sewed me back up. Now, if I had walked out, because that woman, who looked like she walked in off the street, I probably wouldn't be here today. And my heart is now the best part of anything in my body, because they fixed it. And before I went in for surgery, I had one prayer. I didn't pray for y'all. I didn't pray for the health of the nation. I didn't pray for Washington. I didn't pray for any of those things. I just simply said to the Lord, Lord, if you wake me up after the surgery, I want to thank you. That means that you have something else for me to do. If I don't wake up, I want to thank you anyway, because you have come to the conclusion that I've done all that you want me to do. I woke up. That's why I'm here today. I woke up. That's why I go and teach Bible classes, because I woke up. That's why I pray for other people. I woke up. That's why I give more to help those who are really hungry on the streets. That's why it's difficult for me to pass up somebody who I know with a baby in their arms that are really sick, because I woke up. And somehow we need to wake up and let God take over our lives and take us in the direction we should go. I think that's my mandate as a Christian. That's my mandate as a servant. That's my mandate as a preacher, to serve those who are less fortunate than I am. And the reason, not only because I'm saved, but the reason is because I woke up. It means he answered my prayer. If you're here today and you have a need for prayer, you have a need for God's grace and God's mercy and God's forgiveness and God's healing and God's healing power, we ask you to respond to this message as we stand together and as we sing this song of invitation. Mm-hmm.